Saga Egmont presents A Village Vacancy by Julie Houston, read by Laura Bryden. Prologue. September. Westonbury Village, Yorkshire. The evenings were so much darker now the season was turning and summer moving forwards on its inevitable cyclical journey into autumn once more. One minute it was cricket, the intoxicating smells of barbecue smoke drifting over from next door, and seemingly endless days when he didn't even have to think about school, never mind be at the beck and call of those in charge. And then, almost without warning, they were halfway through September and several weeks into the new term, with the heady smell of brand new files and folders, as well as the uncertainty of new friendships, different teachers and kids who didn't like him and didn't understand why he sometimes behaved like he did. But there was always football. Autumn was football and he loved football. He jumped up from the cold stone wall in the shadows of Westonbury Church on which he'd been sitting for seemingly hours but was, in reality, no more than 15 minutes as the other two approached. The taller of the pair glanced behind him and, without speaking or any other indication of recognition, slipped the large brown package into his hands before he and his companion walked off in the direction of Midhope, the train station and the Transpennine route back to Manchester. He stuffed the bulky envelope down the back of his jeans, pulled the t-shirt and oversized cagoule down over the bump and jumped on his bike. He was glad the autumn evenings were so much darker now. Chapter 1. September. The sublimely pretty village church in Westonbury, itself a cut jewel nestled invitingly in a sheltered valley among the heather-covered moorland of West Yorkshire, was looking particularly welcoming this warm morning towards the end of September. Guests, as well as those not officially invited but who had felt unable to stay away, made their way up through the immaculately kept churchyard, in which the heady scent of late summer roses, salvia, phlox, and in particular the buddleias, whose purple flowers were alive with the soporific thrum of bees, tempted and teased noses as effectively as any exclusive French perfumes. Those able to find a seat to rest high heels, recovered from the backs of wardrobes after a summer of comfortable sandals, sat gratefully, turning to nod briefly at acquaintances and neighbours before reaching for the order of service printed on expensive embossed cream card and meticulously laid out on the ancient oak pews in front of them. For those knowing her only by sight or repute, but nevertheless compelled to show their presence in the church, she was after all one of them. The transept at the back of the medieval building was thought a fitting gathering place, and the crowd of well-wishers stationed there grew as the church clock tower began laboriously to toll the hour. Grace Stevens, dressed formally but colourfully in a snug-fitting crimson shift dress and a pair of ridiculously high black patent heels, held firmly onto the hands of the beautiful dark-haired, dark-eyed 5-year-old boy and the pretty little girl intent on waving and blowing kisses to those she recognised as they followed Harriet Westmoreland's brother, John, down the aisle to the very front of the nave, where friends and family were already filling up the vacant pews. After the warm, bright autumn sunshine of the morning, the interior of the church was both dusky and yet somewhat incongruously filled with dancing dust motes where a shaft of light managed to penetrate the interior through one particularly high stained glass window. Despite leaving the warmth and light behind her, Grace kept her dark glasses in place, releasing her son's hand in order to pat at her eyes behind them as well as, occasionally, consolingly at the arm of Harriet's brother now seated beside her. She made an attempt to pull Pietranella.